think we have a guest that just arrived.
Sarah Plourd?
Sarah Plourd is in the building.
Sarah Plourd, who made a book today?
She did.
She bound it?
Well, we should introduce a new voice that we have here in the room.
Are you pausing for me to do the introduction? Ladies and gentlemen, this is Ms. Sarah Plourd.
Howdy.
Sarah Plourd. Yeah. No, Sarah. You go ahead, because I said the beginning, then you should do the next.
I was going to say, Sarah, actually, we work with Sarah here in the building. And
allegedly.
And she is one of the very few people who listened to the podcast and wanted to be a guest. We thought we'd open it up a little bit to some guests, and we thought Sarah would be the perfect first guest to kind of break that ice.
And not one of the few people who listen to the podcast who also works in the office. One of the few people that actually listen.
In total.
Period.
For the whole world.
Yeah.
Well, isn't your entire listenership in this office?
No. It extends far beyond this office. You're one of maybe two people in the office, and then across the world, there are a few more. To bring it up to a grand total of some number, which we'll just call a grand total.
Now, this is strange because you put this on iTunes, right?
Yeah.
Through your website. And now many people download it, but we don't know how many people actually listen to it. Is that how the metrics work?
I don't know how metrics work. And I don't really know how to find out how metrics work. Or I can't understand, you know, you know a bit more about.
Yes.
Is it difficult to understand or is it easy to understand and I just can't do it?
No, actually podcast metrics are a little more difficult to understand than the rest of the web.
They're like, now why? Why do they have to be that
matter?
Way? I thought the whole idea of the digital information age was that we would have exact metrics. We would know precisely who's doing what, when, where, how, with whom at all times.
Someone knows.
The NSA knows exactly how many people are listening to this podcast. But we, the creators of the podcast, do not know.
Yeah. Well, part of the problem is that we don't really have a way to track the end behavior. So, like you say, we know how many people download a thing ostensibly or have subscribed. So, you know, it downloads automatically. But there's really no way to tell when that person hits play or, you know, when they hit play and they're like,
I'm done with this.
I am so over this.
Yeah.
And then they they hit stop.
So in that way, it's really just like it's always been.
Yes.
You'd go out and you'd buy a videotape or a DVD or you'd buy an album. You know people bought it. You don't know if they really ever listened to it.
Exactly.
Or watched it.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. So we've done a lot of work building this new world order, this new infrastructure. Billion-dollar communication system in everybody's pocket. And we still know nothing more than we did.
We know less.
I went to the grocery store this morning. And every time I go to the grocery store, and I, my wife or my older daughter will say they want a specific thing. Can you pick it up? Sure. Now, I know it by sight if it's something we've had before. But if it's something I haven't gotten for them before, I get bewildered. Like a certain type of peanut butter. My wife wanted a certain type of peanut butter. So I'm standing in the aisle with peanut butter, which goes roughly 350 yards, either end. I'm looking at all the peanut butter. Now, for me, peanut butter is peanut butter.
It's all the same?
You get a peanut butter. I don't like it with nuts in it.
It all has nuts.
I don't want the crunch. I want a creamy peanut butter, is what I should say. I don't want one that's got crunchy. It's creamy and it's crunchy. That's it.
The seemingly nut-free peanut butter.
I
want jelly.
No, you don't understand.
You just want a jelly sandwich.
You see, you're turning it around, Don.
No wonder you're bewildered.
But you're looking at it in certain types of brands of something, and there's so much choice. Yeah. Same thing in cereal aisle or anything. There's so much choice. If you want to get something you don't normally get, you're bewildered.
Mm-hmm.
You will stand there and you'll be fuddled for moments before you just say, well, screw it. I'm going to get what I always get and grab it.
I did
exactly that looking at the Chinese food menu the other night. I was like, oh, and I was in the mood. You know when you're in the mood to try something new?
Be a little adventurous, yeah?
Yeah. Never works.
Yeah.
It never works. It was like, oh, no, chicken with broccoli.
Yeah, well, and that's, I think as we have more and more choice, in some ways, things get more and more narrow for you.
Mm.
because you simply, there's so much there that you're an overload. And you just kind of go for what you know.
Yeah. My problem is always, man, if I don't like this, I don't have dinner. That's a bummer.
So you're saying just out of pure time, for time's sake. I just want to have this now. I want to be done with it.
Well, you know you're going to like what you know that you like.
Exactly.
And then these other things, you're like, well, you know, it sounds okay. You know, Szechuan, I like that, and I like chicken, but I don't know what this other thing is. And you need a little sample. They should come around and let you try a little bit of this, kind of like at the ice cream place, we get the tiny spoon of the sample.
But that's where curation comes in.
They do need curators.
This is where you know, it's like a disc jockey that presents music to you. It's like somebody, a movie critic that steers you right, a book critic, some kind of curator some kind of host that takes you. You need a Chinese restaurant menu host. You need somebody to come out to the house with a smorgasbord of things. Before we deliver this, here's some items.
The world needs more tiny spoons.
Yeah.
That's the name of this episode.
Tiny spoons.
The world needs more tiny spoons.
Like those little wooden spoons at the ice cream shop.
Oh, you remember those little wooden spoons you get with those ice cream?
The Hoodsy cups?
Yeah, the Hoodsy cups. And as much and as helpful as you needed them, because whenever you first got those, they were solid blocks of whatever they are.
Yeah, and they had been frozen for at least a year, more than likely.
Right, but actually, I hated the texture of that wooden spoon on my tongue. Like you get the delicious, smooth ice cream and then the scraping cat's tongue of the Hoodsy wood, which is special Hoodsy wood that was made from old balsa wood planes that crashed into a field. They'd scrape them all together.
Yeah,
I used to make those balsa wood planes all the time.
Did you ever do that? I loved it. It was kind of a boy thing.
I did not.
They were the ones and they had elastics on them, too.
Oh, yeah.
You could if you got the one with the elastics, if you had enough, if an extra dollar. Or 50 cents, whatever it was. You get the ones with
those were deluxe.
Those were the deluxe ones.
Deluxe plane. Yeah, not just the glider.
Yes. Yeah.
And it also had the landing wheels.
Yes, it did.
So you could imagine this thing going down a runway, taking off, and then landing at some other airport.
It never really worked.
Oh, it would barely. You know, those things wouldn't even take off. They would. They would. If you got a really flat surface, they would skim down the road for 20 feet.
Yeah.
But you really had to throw them to get any benefit of the rubber band.
It would hit a pebble, and that would blow the whole thing off. If you did it in a very, very smooth driveway, you might get once, but then it would crash, and then it would be a
mess. Wasn't satisfying.
No, it wasn't.
The whole thing. I used to wind those things up to their absolute, I mean, I'd break them all the time, but I would do double rubber bands.
Yeah.
I was always trying to innovate success out of this thing.
You were a Wright brother. You were trying to really, wanted to get more than 12 seconds in the air. You wanted to see if you could make this thing happen.
Yeah.
You were going to break some records.
I wanted to make my dream come true, which is this plane circling overhead for long periods of time, maybe catching the wind, banking around, you know, as though there was something really actually dramatic happening.
You always thought you could do it. You always would buy it again. I would always opt to try that rubber band thing. I think we can do this. It never worked before, but today's my day.
And they fit within a boy's budget. They were always like 89 cents,
which
is about what you'd have.
Right. That's right. You know. And if you wanted to, you could buy like two gliders for the price of the elastic band one.
And they were actually better.
I remember there was a bag and they were 29 cents at this general store at my grandparents' place. Mm-hmm. And we'd go up to my grandparents' place, my grandmother's house. And she was married to a man called Uncle Henry. They married after my grandfather died. Very nice man. He would take me down to the store and we would, you know, buy whatever, we get some candy. And we'd get the balsa wood planes. My brother and I would always get the balsa wood planes because it was just a great place to fly them up in his yard. And we would do that all the time.
And what would you, now this, you never did the balsa wood planes.
No.
What would a young Sarah Plura go to the toy store and find and get? Did you ever do that?
Yeah, we had this little general store in downtown Suncook that has not existed for a long time. And I actually used to go, my dad used to take me all the time, and I'd get, without fail, candy cigarettes.
Oh, yeah.
And I had a lot of those, you know those paddles with the rubber ball really poorly attached.
Yeah, yeah.
It was like somebody like stapled on a rubber band.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And like the idea was that you could bounce it up and down on the pedal.
Sure.
Those never worked.
Yeah. You get three bounces, and then it would inevitably go and kill the cat because the ball would fly off.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was really poorly made. Also, like those, growing up, and I feel like I heard a podcast about this recently, those masks with also with rubber bands just stapled onto the side.
Oh, you mean like it's like a piece of paper and then you would pull the thing over your head? And...
Or it's like a hard plastic.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
With
okay.
edges
yeah,
so sharp.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they don't feel good.
Slice your retinas.
Yeah.
Yeah. I had a lot of those.
Those give you the face sweats.
Yes.
You put them on and instantly you're like, I have such a moist face.
Yeah.
I didn't know.
Yeah.
And you can't see out of the little tiny slits
tiny
they make for
slits,
the eyes.
Like tiny like holes.
Yeah. And the nose is
like
always
Voldemort.
Like poking in the
you
middle.
You get the condensation from your nose in there. And then you would save them for Halloween and you'd have a big thing when you take them out and just be kind of these crusty pieces of plastic shells that would be kind of dovetailed together. And they'd be cracked and broken, but Mom would still insist you couldn't buy a new one. If you bought that one, use that one.
Grotesque.
Yeah, I remember those.
See, the balsa wood is much funner than what you did.
Yeah, balsa wood sounds a little better. I mostly did a lot of crafts when I was a kid.
And that remains to this day.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I just keep crafting.
What was an early crafting thing that you became obsessed by or just, you know, maybe something that really sticks with you when you think back?
I used to like drawing cartoons poorly, mostly poorly.
Your own cartoons or like, you know, Garfield?
Ironically, I did really like Garfield.
I think that was like, there was something about that figure that was kind of easy for people to do, like the eyes. Or like you could really catch the Garfield quality.
It was a gateway cartoon character.
It was a gateway.
It was a lot of half ellipses to Garfield. Yeah. It was all curves. And Odie. Same way. Lots of curved lines. No perspective.
No, why would you?
No. But no, I used to make up stories about witches and things. I was like a tiny goth child.
And what have you grown into?
A large goth child.
Mommy, I want to paint it all black. Paint my entire room black. With the windows, the door, black. Honey, you're 4.
And we were talking about birthdays before you came in. Was your birthday recently too?
Yes.
When was your birthday?
February 19th. So mine is just several days before Rick's.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
February 19th. Yeah, what is yours?
Yeah. Mine is it's a few days after. But that's what we were talking before you came in, Sarah, about how as you kind of get, you know, past 30, it's the point of diminishing returns on a birthday. But Sean was talking about what he did on his birthday, and they had a big birthday party for him, kind of a joke birthday that you know he and that Lois and Sam have for him.
I'll just show her the picture.
It was all princesses.
That sounds lovely.
Yeah. So, but I don't...
That's what they did to me.
I don't talk about my birthday with people because I don't want them to really celebrate it. I don't want it to be a deal. And I don't...
Don't make a big deal out of
me. No, I honestly don't. And when my kids ask me, what do you want for your birthday? It's always a nap. Just for the afternoon, just leave daddy alone for a few hours and let me nap. That's all. I'm not saying that to be mean or anything. I don't really, if we want to have some cake after dinner or something, that'd be great. But I don't want a big deal. And this year, my older daughter was away. It was school vacation week, so she was away. So my wife said, well, why don't we just go out to dinner? We'll have a nice dinner wherever you want and, you know, take the younger child. We'll go and have a nice dinner. So we did. And lo and behold, the four-year-old says to the waitress, the waitstaff, we were at a kind of a lounge area of the common man. And she said, you know, it's my daddy's birthday. Oh.
Oh,
so
no.
I had that like, oh, no. Because I know what's going to come here. I know where this is going to lead
to.
Yeah. The birthday slave staff.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. So, you know, really, if it just meant 5% off the bill, that would be great. But no, it's the whole song and dance.
So practical, Rick.
It's the whole song and dance. So there was a song and dance, which I've learned because my wife and older daughter like to embarrass me this way, is just get through it as fast as possible. Say thank you. Move on. Don't say a word. Don't complain. Move on. That's the only way to deal with it. And I know here at work we have we work with people and they like to celebrate birthdays a lot.
Yes.
Yeah. See, I think there are two things I think of adulthood. And this is from coming from somewhat of a man child. There's two things I think when you become an adult you should do. You drop the Y off your name. The name's not Ricky, it's Rick.
Mm.
Two, if you're over, I don't know, say about 21, that's it for the birthdays.
21?
Yeah, you're done. You're done. You're an adult.
Seems so sad.
Well, I mean, you know.
I don't think Christmas should come to an end. I don't think there should be an end to birthdays. I completely disagree with this. I need a nap. Take this flaming cupcake away from me and stop singing Strangers.
I know it sounds curmudgeon-y, and I felt that way when I was 22. I felt that way. It's like I'm done with this.
It is.
It does.
Yeah. So that's the strange thing about you is that you're a very lighthearted curmudgeon.
I guess so.
Like no one would peg you for that.
But honestly, what is it? I don't. And again, I think that we talked about this before about the Yankee aesthetic, that kind of, it's not about me thing. It's just like, get over it yourself. I feel like what makes me so special.
I know.
Let's think this day
I know
is
all, I know,
one out of 365 days. So what do I only share my birthday with probably a billion other people that have lived?
This is not, making me sad,
I'm not
by
that
the
special.
Way. The direction of this,
yeah,
it's grim.
I don't get it. I just don't get it.
I think you've left us both speechless.
I know. Well, I'm sorry about that.
Sarah.
I'll turn my mic down and let you two discuss amongst yourselves.
What is your actual title here?
Digital producer and designer.
Digital producer and designer. Would you just think of it as graphic design, or is it more than that?
Well, ostensibly it's supposed to be more than that.
Okay.
I
mean, I think of you as the art person.
I like that title better.
Art person?
I think that would be a more practical title. Wouldn't that be?
Yeah.
Isn't that
great? Feel like we should adopt that.
We need the art person in here.
Yeah.
Where's Sarah?
I don't like long, complicated titles.
Well, also, that's a title that kind of leaves you cold, the digital, whatever you said.
Yeah.
It's
like, we don't end up anywhere with that. We just end up going,
And shouldn't we be over calling things digital?
Yeah.
Why are we separating all that now at this point?
I don't know.
Why? Wow. It just doesn't make any sense. I think art director would make the most sense. I mean,
art director
would be good.
It makes sense.
And it's a title that tells you what I do. You know,
I think
you direct the art.
It's a little bit, you know, on the spectrum, but I kind of like that in titles.
Mm-hmm.
We have, you know, instead of an HR director here at the station, we have a director of people and culture, which generally gets a lot of eye rolls from people because it sounds
I'm one of them.
Super public radio.
Yeah, it is. It is.
But I gave it some more thought, and I was like, you know, it is a little bit of sort of like how, you know, somebody with Asperger's might explain what an HR director is.
Right.
I guess that's true. I
kind of love it for that reason.
I like the whole idea of the director. I like it better than human resources, which is always a bogus title as well.
Yes.
But a director of people, I get that. Why do you have to add on the and culture?
Well, that's the public radio part.
There's no such thing as director of culture. You don't direct a culture. A culture is a grassroots idea. It's not,
especially this culture.
Yeah, any culture, really. If you want to be, by definition, a culture is not something you direct.
Yes.
So it doesn't make any sense to me. And it also just reeks of too much academia.
Well, but they couldn't.
It reeks of too many degrees.
Mm.
I don't think they could stop at people, though. You can't just say director of people, because then there's something too sudden with that. So they had to keep going.
People and forums.
People and.
But that
and
I think
their
that diminishes
interests.
His or her position.
To make it people and culture?
Well, I mean, it's almost saying like, so what do you mean? You organize the birthday parties for the adult people who still want to have them? It doesn't make any sense to me.
Right.
It doesn't, you know, it's like, that's not what...
It's better than human resources.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess. But we've come to at least know what that means.
Right.
You know.
That's true. We kind of know, we kind of have a go-to thought.
This isn't just public radio, I think it's a corporate culture nowadays, is we really want to reinvent things. Because we have people coming in from business school that got a lot of degrees, and they really have to show off their degrees. So they want to reinvent things. They want to reinvent the wheel. And in order to do that, well, we need more wordy titles.
Well, I think we always...
Everybody gets a title.
Or creative titles.
Everybody gets a title.
I hate creative titles. Yeah. Like, you're not a marketing ninja. You're just a director of marketing.
Right, yeah, exactly.
Just stop.
What's that guy that's at Yahoo that they have... he's in charge of their vision.
Oh,
it's the best
guy.
One. It's the it's like Marketing Ninja, but
yeah.
it's even more hi-ya.
Yes.
Jiu-jitsu, some kind of...
I feel like Sarah will know. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah,
no, I know what you're talking about, and I can't remember.
He's got this really wild, long black hair.
Crazy haircut.
It has something to do with vision.
Yes.
Knowing the future. Oh, it's not profit.
Oh, maybe
it's
it
a
is.
A digital hat with digital some rabbit ears on it?
Yeah. Maybe, well, he just is naturally this way.
Yeah.
I think it's digital profit.
I bet he is.
I think it is.
It's not that, it's very similar to like...
Uh-huh.
You can't get higher than profit, you know? When you're adopting kind of religious terminology to
you can't get
a,
higher
the
than,
business.
You can't get higher than profit, hipster. You can't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it reminds me of, we were talking earlier about your Mazda and how when you bought it, when you turn the car on...
It would say hello.
It says hello, but that's it. It's not...
It's an empty...
It's not really an advanced car. I think a lot of what's happening in our modern world with the trying to adopt everything that is the internet into what we do in this digital world, we're still in that kind of hello phase, you know, where... We're trying to make everything seem like it's all interlaced together.
We're still really, really enamored with digital watches. You know what I mean? We're at that point where it's like, ooh, liquid crystal display. And cars, at least. That we're still really enamored with that whole idea. We're not really interacting quite yet with it.
And eventually we're going to return to art director once we just get used to that's just really what it was anyway.
Yeah.
We're going to return to that, and we will get rid of all this digital this and that and all these ways that we like to name how there's this convergence of media forms. When we get tired and we just realize that we don't need to talk about it, we don't need to always be displaying that we know that we're bringing these things together, we'll say hello, unlike your Mazda, and I don't know what like.
I feel like we're still at the... You know, when you take up a new hobby, there's that enthusiast point where you're like, it's new, it's still a little bit shiny, and you're trying to learn everything you can about that, and it like takes over your life. Maybe other people don't.
Super obsessional.
Rick and I don't have this. You're speaking to the hobbyists.
Oh.
So you're talking about when you get super obsessional and you talk super shop, you're always talking shop with it because it's very... You're very niche into it. You're very focused on...
When it's still a little bit... When you're in the honeymoon phase of learning something new and you really want to learn everything you can and you're really excited about it and it hasn't just sort of become part of your interests. It hasn't sort of filtered into your life in a way that's a little more sane.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I feel like we're still at that point as human beings with the digital stuff. It's like... You know, it's like somebody who's just taken up electronics, you know, it's like, let's put internet in cars and our wrists and our
refrigerator.
Eyeglasses. Yeah. You know, it's like, let's put the internet in all the things, but without, because we can, you know, without thinking, why do you want internet in your car? Like you're driving, you can't actually use this. It's weird.
And another thing to me is that we have gotten, at least in the first world, you put this under first world problems, we've gotten to the point where we are so amused to death that anything, any second, that we would not have instant access to anything we want. And in a car, talking about, you know, self-driving cars and all this and, you know, having AI eventually in them, which is going to be a lot harder than we'd like to pretend it's going to be. Are you telling me that in your car now, you are so bored in your half-hour commute to work between the choices of, you know, radio, internet, you know, whatever other media plugged in your podcast. Like, you cannot amuse yourself for the 30 minutes. You need the car to drive for yourself so you can do some shaving. I don't know, cut your nails, take a shower out back. What are you going to do? What is? Are we really to that point where we really need the car to do that for us? Like, it's too much for me to use my... I can't possibly be bothered to pay attention to the road for the 25 minutes I need to get to work. We're down to that point now.
I was looking forward to those little things that you just dismissed. Now I have
Sean
to...
Sean was really looking forward to the shower car.
Yeah. I mean, you could take a shower in your car...
That would be amazing. Would be a technology I could get behind. I don't need the internet. Want a shower.
All right, so once you do that, because you can, right?
Yeah.
Now, what are you going to do with that extra half hour at home?
Sleep.
You could sleep in the car on the way. You don't need the whole shower setup.
Oh, see, and I'm surprised that Rick isn't getting behind this because he could nap.
Yeah, right. I don't know why we need so much amusement all the time. Like, we don't have enough.
Well, I don't know if it's... maybe distraction is more. Because I don't know how amused we are.
We just want to be distracted from thinking about we're all going to die someday. Is that what it comes down to? It is?
What is got really goth Rick, in here.
I don't want to get all goth
and Rick's doing it again.
And it's not me.
Sarah.
I'm just kidding. I love having instant access to information, but I want it.
What was the?
But I think it almost makes us infantile in some ways.
Mm.
We don't want to for any minute not be connected to something.
Well, we also don't remember anything now.
No, it's true.
Like, do you remember Sean's phone number?
No.
No.
No. You scroll down at a list and you hit send or call.
Right.
Or you tell your phone, please call Sean. Or you don't even say please.
Well, I think we sort of double don't remember. I mean, Rick doesn't really, he probably has seen my phone number 2 times. So we're not remembering those kinds of details about each other.
Yeah, we just say Sean on the phone.
I feel like there's something even deeper at work and whatever this kind of distractibility that I feel on a day-to-day basis that is erasing my regular past. Like, I'm having trouble. Maybe I'm getting older and it's some other thing, but I feel like things are fuzzier and foggier as I'm living more and more in this twitchable moment.
Mm-hmm.
Like this little constant questing for the next little thing is deteriorating like the infrastructure of my memory banks. And I don't know if that's real.
That might be because you're 48 now.
No, Rick, I want to blame the internet.
No, but there probably is something to it. I mean, as somebody who, you know, reads books about brain science for fun.
That being you?
Look at you showing off a little bit. I read books about...
What do you read for fun, Rick?
You read Harry Potter.
Think that was impressive. I thought that was really lame. but, like, you know, it's sort of like your brain wants to dump things that ostensibly you don't need. So, you know, you go to the mall and
my brain
you park
loves that.
And like hopefully you remember where you parked long enough to get back to your car and then your brain is like, all right, I'm done with that.
Mm-hmm.
But things that you want to remember, you have to actually use them to, like, you know, it's sort of like you dig a channel, but then you have to keep going down that path, otherwise it grows over.
Mm.
You know, it's like you're walking through the woods and you can tell, oh, there used to be a trail here. But right now, it's just brambles and roots and broken ankles, which is what my brain is. But I feel like you're never going back to things. You're never, like, re-referencing information. There's so much, like, knew this, knew that.
There's no channels.
There's no channels. It's all roots and broken ankles.
You always assume that you could find it if you wanted to, but you forget about it in the first place.
Right, you know? And your brain actually, once you stop accessing stuff in your brain does actually let go of that stuff after a while.
Yeah.
It's like
muscle memory.
Exactly. It's like learning a language in high school and then never speaking it again.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Like, you are actually going to lose. You're not going to, like, you know.
That's true.
Go back to Spain and be like, oh, I remember my fourth grade Spanish.
I'm sure we could read books from the 1950s and people saying the same thing about the pervasive use of television when it was escalating. And I'm sure we could go back, you know, 75 years and talk about how people said comics were going to ruin youth. And you could go back further than that. And
they have.
Talk about some, you know what I mean? I don't want to be that curmudgeon about it because I feel like I would much rather live now. Mm-hmm. than 50 years ago. I think living in this age is infinitely better in a whole myriad of ways.
Mm-hmm.
However, I do think that as we do get more and more distracted by any kind of technology in your hand, whether you know it be a smartphone or whether you are, there's screens everywhere you go now. You know, like at the checkout counter of every place, there's screens. You can't escape that kind of, you know, omnipresent media all the time. I think that that does wear you down a little bit. I think mm-hmm. it wears the synapses out a little bit because you're overstimulated all the time. And like Sean mm-hmm. was saying, I think you don't think back and kind of ruminate on experiences anymore like you might have.
Here's a way that I see the kind of lack of kind of the past kind of recurring enough in the present for it to be retained.
Mm-hmm.
Do you use a Kindle or do you just read real books?
I read real books.
Okay. I've been resistant to the Kindle for a long time, but I've had one for a number of years, and mm-hmm. at some point I kind of flopped into just using it. And now it's hard for me to read a real book because mm-hmm. they're so heavy.
Mm-hmm.
It does feel like a very heavy and like cumbersome thing to flip the pages. I've mm-hmm. become a kind of a digital baby. But the thing about that is my greater problem is that now that I'm reading the Kindle, I can't remember the books that I've read
mm-hmm.
Because they aren't lying around the house where my eye kind of will sometimes rest on them. And at that moment when my eye rests on them, their substance kind of gets brought back into my conscious just for a moment. But
yep.
now that they're not there, I completely forget all these books that I've read, and I won't be able to tell. I can hardly tell you the last 4 books that I've read. But if they were around the house, I could tell you the last 20 books, and their stories would be much more richly
their
present.
Their essence would mm-hmm. suddenly come back
in my brain.
That's interesting. You say that the last novel I read, I finished about a week ago. That was on Kindle, and the book I read before that was an actual book, and I could probably tell you more about the book than I could the Kindle story. That's really interesting you say that because I've almost forgotten some of the things I've read on Kindle until I go back and look.
Yeah, and you're like, I forgot mm-hmm. I read that.
Before, you know, if I went to load something, if I went to buy some other book, you know, I look, I can see the list. I forgot I read that.
Right.
I think it's really interesting. The physical object somehow
triggers
something in your...
You have a relationship with it.
Mm.
And it's not just a simple relationship. It's complex because the thing has a feel, it has a mm-hmm. scent. You have a very tactile relationship to it, which gets wrapped into the whole experience of the story, not in an amazingly deep or complicated way, but enough that there's this weird rooted, this object, it's sprouted these secret roots that have come into you, and you kind of, I'm going to go off on a deep end, and so I'm going to stop right there.
Shake, shake.
So thank you so much for coming.
Oh, thank you for having me.
It was awesome to have a third voice.
It was nice.
What'd you think?
It was really nice. Kind of took the pressure off a little bit.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It was kind of having that.
You could rest.
Yeah.
And you could
listen.
It's
like having a table with 3 legs. It just seems to work better rather than the 2. It was wobbly. We had that third one to lean on.
All we ever did was fall over.
Yeah.
But that was part of, that was probably our magic.
Yeah, it might be.
No,
I may have ruined it.
All right. No, this is the new 3-legged stable.
That's
magic.
Right. That's right.
On Magic 106.7.
Dun, dun. Love songs. I remember that. David Allen Boucher.
We need to have something that we say when we go out. But
I don't know. We just kind of play that song, the Lamplighter song.
It's a nice song.
May I let it go?
Yeah. Thank you for joining us. Hey, if you've listened this far, let us know. That's one of our metrics.
Right. Mm. Yeah, and mm-hmm. let us know what you think of the show or what you'd like to hear. Comment about it. Let us know. Send us a little note.
And whether the Lamplighter should actually just consist of Sarah Plourd by herself, talking about her own interests and things, because I could see that.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't listen to that.
I could hear that.
Well, you wouldn't, but you're you.
That's probably true.
I wouldn't listen to a show that was me.
I am probably me.
And on that note.
And I am probably me.
We're going to extinguish the lamps for another.
We need a lamp sound effect. That's right.
We do.
I can't make it. Well, I was on the verge of. Psh,
well, it's about your imagination. This is the theater of the mind.
Yeah.
Till next time.
Wherever he would go. The old lamplighter of love. we had was so much whiter beneath the candle glow. The old lamp lighted of long, long ago. You'd hear the patter of his feet as he came toddling down the street. His smile had a lonely heart, you see. If there were sweethearts in the park, he'd pass a lamp and leave it dark, remembering the days that used to be. For he recalls when dreams were new, he loved someone who loved him too, who walks with him alone in memory. He made the night a little brighter wherever he would go. The old lamp lighted of long, long ago. Now if you look up in the sky, you'll understand the reason why the little stars at night are all aglow. He turns them on when night is here. He turns them off when dawn is near. The little man we loved of long ago. He made the night a little brighter wherever.